Next speaker, Douglas Headley, to come to the podium. Douglas Headley is the Executive Director of the Canadian Faculties of Agriculture and Veterinary Medicine. He has also been part of Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. He retired in 2004 as Assistant Deputy Minister. And he continues to work on a topic very close to my heart, farm income issues in Canada and the United States. He's provided training for governors in China, and he still looks at exploring farm marketing and processing approaches within Canada and North America. I'd like you to give a warm round of applause to Mr. Douglas Headley.
This one?
That's right.
Thank you very much. I want to thank again the organizers of this conference on a topic that has been part of my life for a very long time, and one I think that is increasingly critical in the world. This morning I want to do two or three things, and I have far too many slides for the time, so I will go through them fairly quickly. I want to review the Millennium Development Goals very briefly. I want to talk a little bit about the price spikes, what we know about them, why didn't we see them coming, the Doha dilemma, the moribund round, demand and supply, looking forward a little bit on where we're going, and finally some conclusions. I'm not going to go through all the Millennium Development Goals, but the case I would make is that of all of them, all eight goals, every single one is directly or indirectly attached to the issue of food and food security. You cannot escape that conclusion when you look at it, either in terms of the goals themselves or the 48 indicators that we now have. In fact, we're now up over 50 indicators on the Millennium Development Goals. Simply, it's not enough to just talk about eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. You also have to deal with universal primary education, gender equality, child mortality, maternal health, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases like tuberculosis that's expanding in the world, again, and ensuring environmental sustainability and developing a global partnership for development. That must include food and food security. The price spikes. First of all, the run-up. Why did it happen? Well, what you find in the markets is that you have much shorter pipelines today, much lower stocks around the world. The trade in our major commodities has moved to just in time, very different than it was even 10 years ago. Maize or corn and oil have been linked by biofuel policies in North America and Europe in particular. Drought was a proximate cause. Given the sensitivity in those markets, you suddenly saw drought triggering a rise with all of these other underlying circumstances. Cash and future prices for at least 2 years on our major commodities in the U.S. markets were not coming together at the beginning of the month. That's very clear. One of our speakers, I think Chris Delgado, mentioned the issue of speculation in that market. In Canada, not only did we have the run-up in prices, we saw a major change in exchange rate. The Canadian dollar is a resource currency. As oil went up, then we saw the Canadian dollar go from 64 cents to at one point $1.11, falling back now to the low 90s, probably sustainable so long as oil price is strong. What that whole shift in prices has done is caused substantial distress in the North American hog and cattle markets. In fact, we're reducing hog production in North America at a time when hog products are increasingly sought in trade around the world. There's new plateaus in cereal and oilseed prices that are emerging. I do not see any forecast in the world for a retreat to our former price levels. But we still have some very major adjustments ahead in all of our commodity markets as we adjust to those higher cereal and oil prices. Could we have seen it coming? the upward trend in rice prices since the 1990s. Bob Ziegler noted that last year. It was also on the slide yesterday of grain prices that Dr. Brinkman showed us. We also have now much greater sensitivity in the markets to climate shocks, demand shocks, pipeline stock shortages, and oil prices. The Doha Dilemma. Historically, the agriculture agreement has covered only three things. Very early in this round, export subsidies, at least in their most notorious form, we agreed to drop them, and both the U.S. and Europe have largely done so. There's still some other issues in export subsidies yet to be done. The real critical issues are domestic subsidies and market access, and the linkage there between the North and the South, the North having to cut subsidies, the South having to give access, and we have not been able to resolve that difference. One of the problems we face in the Doha is that we see a whole lot of other issues crowding into the discussions on agriculture. Trade and the environment, food safety, private standards, consumers' rights to know, biofuels, geographic indicators. You can add others like bioterrorism if you wish. The interesting thing about it is that most of these are outside the agriculture agreement, yet they're going to have to be dealt with through agriculture and impact on agriculture. Agriculture is not leading on them. Many are intertwined with other sections of the WTO agreement. There's many more institutions now involved in those sets of discussions, and it dramatically increases the difficulty in finding consensus in the Doha round. When you look at the world's political agenda, what you find is that the short-run issues are driving out the longer-term issues on trade that a number of speakers, including Neil this morning, has pointed out is so necessary in resolving world food security. Those issues are environment, terrorism, health care, economic recovery, monetary and fiscal imbalances, sovereign wealth funds, replacing the U.S. dollar with SDRs. I mean, there's a whole range of them out there that are crowding into the economic agenda that is going to put off or slow down any hope in Doha. I show you this slide. You can look at it. My only point to you is very simple. If you're above the age of 40, this is the only round that you in your career are going to deal with. Your children and your grandchildren are going to deal with the next one. Because if we don't get it done now, we are going to be almost at maximum population before you see the results of the next round. We got to get it done in this round. The demand picture. You can go through all sorts of estimates. I've done some very crude ones here. What it tells you is that you have population growth, you have income growth, you've got expanded demand for products that are going to use agricultural resources but not contribute to the food supply. And they are biofuels, biofibers, bioplastics. Atropa is an example of that already in the developing world. How much that is, I don't think we know yet when we look out forward. You can add it all up, and what you have to have minimum, absolute minimum, is 1.7 to 1.8% annually in total factor productivity growth. Joe DeBrew made that point yesterday. If you fall below this level, what that means is rising prices and greater difficulty in reduction of hunger. Absolutely clear on that. If you look at the supply side, we have some expansion left in land, largely extensive agriculture, not intensive except for water use. We've had volume and yield increases based on increased yield capability, water, more land, fertilizer, plant protection, agronomic practices in the works. They have kept us in reasonably good shape over the last 40 years. We got long-term real price declines because of it. Here's an interesting piece of work that came out just not long ago. It looks at yield, global average yield changes. I know these figures are being challenged, but just to show you that yield increases in the last 10, 15 years are substantially below what they were in the earlier periods of the last century. We have to address that. All yields are below the 15-year average. Growth in maize and soybeans are a little higher than wheat and rice, in part because the private sector does a lot of research in those two crops compared to wheat and rice, but they're still lower than the expected demands. And what that tells me is that we cannot rely exclusively on the private sector to provide the research. There must be public research growth in total factor productivity to meet the kinds of demands that we are going to face. What we see is a lag in results from productivity research investments. They're very long time frames. They're 5 to 15 years in crops, longer for large animals, and we have more risks in future supply now than we have had in the past. Plant and animal diseases, UG99 is the critical one in my view at the moment. Environmental pressures on expanding the land base, water availability and distribution, energy costs, which are now tied to agriculture very tightly, growing use of resources for non-food bioproducts, climate change, greater variation in climate and climatic events that are going to occur more frequently. Here's one that links back to the Millennium Development Goals. I'll let you read it. What it says is that there's 25 million additional malnourished children just because of climate change. I want to talk a little bit about research because it lies underneath that total factor productivity growth. What we're finding, what I'm finding when I look at the research capacity in Canada in particular, we're doing project funding. We're doing it with relatively short-term metrics. And in doing that, we are getting a lot of research that is unconnected project by project. It's an inch wide and a mile deep. Nobody is putting it together. We have to expand our investments in that. We have to link those investments internationally because Canada is so small in terms of the overall world research. We must worry about spill-ins and spill-outs on our research. The real issue, in my view, given the G8 and G20 that's coming along, what can Canada do to take leadership in addressing the issue of global food security? Progress is slow in eradicating hunger. In fact, we've moved backward. Price spikes have masked what I regard as an insidious decline in yield growth. Increased spending in total on research, but farm productivity research is still declining. We cannot meet future world food demands at constant real prices with current investments in research. A former colleague of mine in the CG system, Dr. Ratan Lal, soil scientist at The Ohio State University now, one of the world leaders on carbon sequestration in agriculture, those who refuse to use modern science to address urgent global issues must be prepared to endure more global suffering. Thank you very much.